Now, this time last week, many of us were, I think, cautiously optimistic about the ceasefire that was due to come into force in Syria. 7 days on, and it seems the conflict, much longer now than World War One, believe it or not, but that conflict has reached a new level of ferocity with big attacks on Aleppo, if you've just been listening to the news in AM. This week's been very bloody indeed, and peace now seems more distant than ever, as Secretary of State John Kerry's uncharacteristic display of emotion at this week's General Assembly so vividly demonstrates.
I listened to my colleague from Russia, and I sort of felt a little bit like we're sort of in a parallel universe here. How can people go sit at a table with a regime that bombs hospitals and drops chlorine gas again and again and again and again and again and again and acts with impunity? You're supposed to sit there and have happy talk in Geneva under those circumstances when you've signed up to a ceasefire?
Sergei Lavrov was left glaring from ringside at the United Nations Security Council.
Everyone is entitled to their own opinion, but you are not entitled to your own facts. On Monday, and Sergei just said, well, let's examine the facts and see what happened. On Monday, 20 aid workers were killed in an outrageous, sustained, two-hour attack directed at a fully authorized humanitarian mission near Aleppo. Fully authorized.
And that report was from Sky News reporter Sam Kiley. And of course, Sergei Lavrov has given press conferences today calling for a focus on the facts and more investigation. The International Syria Support Group, made up of foreign ministers from 23 nations with a stake in the conflict, met on the sidelines of the General Assembly yesterday to try to revive the ceasefire negotiated between the US and Russia. And there are clearly still hopes just that a new seven-day ceasefire can be imposed by the two big countries. But should there be hopes? That's the question we'll try to examine now, given the current strategies. The persistent failures are prompting some deep reflection indeed about the nature of war, peace, the toughest of power politics, and ruthlessly cynical tactics where civilians like those poor people of Aleppo are simply pawns amidst much bigger strategies. It's like an object lesson in savage foreign policy politics. And some American commentators especially are starting to wonder out loud, stridently, as to whether some basic mistakes are being made. Why keep going back to the same principles which haven't worked, expecting a different result? The definition of insanity, said one commentator. Well, Daniel Serwer is a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a scholar at the Middle East Institute. And he's been watching as well. He joins me from Washington, D.C. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Professor Serwer, do you think, as a sort of seasoned observer of these things, there is any hope of a ceasefire?
There's always some hope of a ceasefire, but the Russians and Syrians have made it absolutely clear that they want to maximize their gains against the opposition. And even if there is a ceasefire, I don't think it can last very long.
Our own Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull was at the Security Council at the UN this week, and he said he does now fear that the Syrian conflict is fast becoming a proxy war between Cold War foes, the US and Russia. Is that how you see it developing?
I think that's what the United States is trying to avoid. The U.S. has assiduously avoided attacks against any Russian assets in Syria. It's even avoided attacks on Syrian government assets, so there was one recently in Deir ez-Zor in the east. The United States is trying to keep its focus on the Islamic State and Jabhat al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria. It's trying to avoid war with the Syrian government or with Russia.
Yes, but that's, anyway, we'll come to that. There was a very good summary. I thought it was one of the best types of sort of good old-fashioned newspaper clarity being provided by this week. And people might like to go to it. It was in the Financial Review, reprinted in our Financial Review on Wednesday of this week, The Syrian War Explained. And it said, in a sense, trying to analyse it makes more sense if you think of it as four overlapping conflicts. And I won't go into them all individually, but I wonder whether, you know, how you've made your way through trying to just sort it out.
Well, I can count at least four overlapping conflicts. And the fact of the matter is it's a mess. And it's a mess very largely due to Russian and Iranian intervention in Syria, which gave courage to Bashar al-Assad in his attacks on his own people. The United States has contributed its share largely by hesitating to exercise its full power, and that has left a vacuum that's being filled by extremists.
Yes, well, now that's exactly what I detected was the real sort of tendency coming this week. The United States has, just what you said, has failed to exercise its full power. Are there not risks in doing just that?
There are risks in exercising power, and there are risks in not exercising it. And President Obama has said quite out loud that he has puzzled over this long and hard. I think he's made a mistake on the side of restraint, but there are a lot of people in the United States who think restraint is exactly what we need after long and unsatisfying wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
And have you changed your mind on this? I mean, you're a man, you know, a specialist in conflict resolution and in peacemaking. This is, by the sound of you, you've also wrestled long and hard about it.
Well, I have. But looking at the current situation, it's quite clear that John Kerry has no alternative. He said this quite openly. I have no alternative. Without an alternative, you can't get a good deal in a negotiation. You have to be ready to walk away, and your walking away has to lead to something else, that will be undesirable from your adversary's point of view. And I think President Obama has simply not given John Kerry what he needs to deliver a satisfactory negotiated outcome by ruling out military action against the Syrian government or against Hezbollah. There are a lot of choices of whom he could take action against. I mean, there are helicopters dropping barrel bombs, which is a violation of the Security Council resolution and a clear attack on civilian populations every day. Why are those helicopters able to land and sit overnight without any risk? There are things that could be done still, additional sanctions. There are covert things that can be done. It seems to me what the president has done is to deprive John Kerry of what he needed to be a successful negotiator.
Yes, well, I noticed that I gather the debate in the States is once it goes like this, people say that the administration says, what is the alternative? And as some commentators have said, including your own colleagues at the Middle East Institute, the alternative is to have a couple of clearly stated principles, civilian protection and real discernible consequences for violators, which might even mean, and this is what people I've been talking to here in Australia, essentially warning the Russians that they will take them on in the air and that the Russians wouldn't take the Americans on in the air because the Americans would win, all of which is very dangerous strategy. But is that where we've got to go? We've got to sort of, is that your view? Shift up a notch in language?
Well, I don't think so. I think there's a very strong consensus in the U.S. that we do not want to be attacking Russian assets inside Syria. We don't want to go to war with Russia. There are a lot of other things we can do. There are Hezbollah forces on the ground inside Syria, which were an important part of of the forces that are protecting Bashar al-Assad at this moment. There are Syrian government helicopters that are dropping barrel bombs on civilian populations. They do not have to be hit while they're flying. They can be hit on the ground much more readily and much, much more easily. I don't think that we're ready to go to an air war against Russia, and I think there are lots of options short of that.
I suppose what I mean is, even risking it, even changing your language, which is more Cold War language, like which gives me the heebie-jeebies, I admit it, but that's the argument, that Russia is not a reliable partner for peace, and that Kerry keeps going back imagining that, or Obama gives him those orders, and that actually to saber-rattle a bit more and say, all right, if you want to play like this, so will we, and they would pull back, that's what they understand, that type of power, strength, behavior. I wonder what your judgment is.
I think that's correct. I just don't think we have to destroy Russian aircraft to make our point. I think there are ways far short of that that are much less likely to create very serious problems for us with the Russians. So I think, yes, we need to have a credible threat, one that can actually be carried out, in order to strengthen John Kerry's negotiating hand. And if the Russians and Syrians don't respond appropriately, we need to be ready to carry out that threat.
And what about the fact that there are all these different warring parties? I don't just mean inside Syria, that's sort of breathtaking enough, but that Iran is involved, and Saudi Arabia and Turkey, along with the US and Russia. How does that change the way you, the tactics that might be used?
Well, it makes it extraordinarily difficult. Two-party conflicts are already very difficult to negotiate an end to. Multi-party conflicts are infinitely more difficult, and this is just not just multi-party, as you point out, but multi-level in the sense that there are people inside Syria fighting each other, many parties, and there are people from outside Syria either fighting or providing resources with which others fight. And that, I think some simplification of the war is absolutely necessary in order to get to a resolution. And that, in a way, is what John Kerry is trying to do. He's trying to organize a front against the extremists in Syria. Unfortunately, the Russians and the Syrians show much more interest in killing non-extremists than killing extremists.
Yes, and it is interesting watching. I think it was so devastating. Well, you know, you felt John Kerry's emotion as your own, that one imagines that deep down there's a preference for peace if it can possibly be conjured up, with some people who oughtn't to retain their dignity being allowed to retain their dignity for a while. That just doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, yeah, I think John Kerry is very upset. Samantha Power the other night really blasted the Russian ambassador at the UN and walked out on him, and he walked out on her. These are tough times. And I think we have to be cautious, because things can always be made worse and are much more likely to become worse than they are likely to become better.
And I suppose a possible change of leadership in Washington too, that's a very pertinent remark.
Well, absolutely. And whoever is elected, the Russians and Iranians and the Chinese and many others will want to test the new president very quickly after they come to office. So having some clarity about what our objectives are and having some clarity about what means we're prepared to use to achieve those objectives, and that they actually have some chance of achieving those objectives, is very important.
Look, can I just, because we have to go, but just one quite a final question, because conflict resolution theory, which, you know, you are a specialist in, tells us that one of the key conditions for negotiating the settlement of a conflict is what's called a hurting stalemate, where both sides realise they can't achieve their aims by further fighting. And now we clearly haven't got one at the moment. Do you think, and we thought we did about a week ago, that's the devastating thing. I read something from Joshua Keating from Slate saying exactly that. Do you think it could be engineered?
Not without the U.S. Doing something quite a bit stronger than it has so far. There is no mutually hurting stalemate in Syria. The regime believes that it's making real progress against the opposition. The Russians are enabling that, and the Russians have doubled down on their bet on Bashar al-Assad, which means they're even more loath to lose him at this point. So, no, I do not believe that the condition of a mutually hurting stalemate has been achieved. And what it would require to achieve it is some definitive action on the American side that strengthens the opposition. That could mean arming them more. That could mean military intervention. It could mean lots of different things. But without it, we won't have a mutually hurting stalemate.
Daniel Serwer, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Daniel Serwer is from the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a scholar at the Middle East Institute, where there's been some very strong material coming out.